Welcome to episode 29 of the Pokemon Gold podcast.
Oh, it's a beautiful goal, isn't it? A beautiful goal.
What a save!
Messi enganchó como le gusta el probo con zurda.
Morta again, another time, the shot on the front of it!
Oh, what a goal! What a goal that is!
What a goal from David Beckham!
Oh, Zinedine! Oh, Zinedine! La passa!
Different class.
My name is James Carew, co-editor of Pokemon Goal, Ireland's only football publication, exploring football culture at home and around the globe. Visit PokemonGoal.BigCartel.com for past issues of the magazine featuring quality writing, photography and illustration from international contributors. You'll also find other merchandise including scarves, sweatshirts and exclusively designed footballs.
My name is Ali. I'm a filmmaker who's obsessed with football.
Followed it my whole life. The club means everything.
I don't really know anything different than Newry City.
You won't get that in one of those giant stadiums on a second and third tier. You get that supporting your local football team.
Forever, forever, forever,
this might be the most heated derby you've never heard about.
There's always been a bit of a rivalry between Drogheda and Dundalk.
The rivalry is bitter enough, you know, it is. Like,
expect a lot of hatred.
We've suddenly become a league with a lot of young players. It's about an all-round strengthening of the league.
This is just unbelievable!
Unbelievable!
Most games are sellouts at home.
It does feel that there's a greater connection with the League of Ireland than there's ever been.
Love it! Love everything about it! You can see the place, it's absolutely rocking here!
On today's episode, I'm joined by Ali McKenzie, a documentary producer and director who's worked in film and television for over a decade, but whose first love is football, which led him to launch the Match in a Minute channel, which has since amassed millions of views and thousands of followers. So welcome to the Pokemon Gold podcast, Ali.
Great, James. Thanks very much for having me on.
Ali, as we do with all our guests, we first start off by saying, how did you first get interested in football?
So this might be a bit of contention for your listenership or your readership, James, but I was born in Scotland up near Aberdeen, but my dad was a diehard Rangers fan. So he actually named me after Ali McCoist.
Oh, wow.
I don't think I ever had a choice in life whether I was going to like football or not. He actually wanted to call me Ali McCoist McKenzie, but my mum was from South Armagh. And she was kind of like, if we ever move back to South Armagh, first of all, he's going to get a second. Second of all, he'll never get a job in his life. So he had to kind of settle for Ali. But I think from day one, as soon as they found out that my mum was pregnant, he just said, it's a boy and he's going to be called Ali. So yeah. I had no choice in life that I was always going to be a football fan, you know.
Well, I mean, regardless of your allegiances, Ali McCoist is probably my favourite co-commentator. So I think it's a great name and it's a great story.
That's it. And it's always a danger naming your child after someone. But thankfully, there's been no massive scandals or anything like that. So it's still a safe name to stick by.
Yeah, if you can survive playing for Rangers, you can survive anything. So you said like you were destined to be a football fan. So what was that like growing up?
It was good. I mean, football when I was growing up was a real treat, I suppose, in Scotland, especially to go to games. I went to probably more Aberdeen games than anywhere else because my cousins were season ticket holders. So when I was young, they used to take me into matches. My very first game was in the away end of Pittodrie with my dad. I think I was only 8 years old at a Rangers game. And yeah, it was just mesmerizing at that age to go somewhere. And I think everybody's experienced it, but to be in the away end, especially against that partisan crowd. And to me, it was just like eyes open. But I never thought the football was something you could do all the time, you know, because it was like, for us, it was a massive treat to be able to go, coming from like a real working family. It was a massive effort to get us to matches. And then, you know, I grew up in Fraserburgh, it's called in Scotland, and we used to go down and watch our local team there. And I remember like hopping over the wall to see them. But as I got a little bit older and it became more of an interest, you know, football became my go-to thing at the weekends. So particularly in my late teens, when the group of friends that we had, we all got involved then, and now we're living back in Newry at this point, but we all got involved and started going to Newry matches here and there. And through the college then, I started actually picking up a camera and doing highlights for the club. So
yeah,
that was kind of before I really started following them. So it came around full circle about 5 or 6 years later when I then made a documentary for them. But yeah, football was always like a real treat. And then it became, you know, somewhere where your friends were, and became the social aspect that I was like, I actually want to go here and socialise with my friends, you know.
Yeah, it's amazing how that translates with almost all our guests. Did you play growing up?
I did. I'd like to think I was okay when I was younger, but I had real gammy knees, so unfortunately that knocked it in the head. But I picked it up rightly when I went to uni. I lived in Winchester, which is in the south of England, and we had a real fierce, like, six-a-side Saturday night league, which was just brilliant, you know. And you think you're a good player, and then you're playing against guys that grew up in London and had trials for, like, Crystal Palace and QPR. Yeah. It's just a different world, but... yeah, I always enjoy playing it, and I still love doing the five-a-side now. It's just a good social thing, I think, isn't it? Like, getting out there and burning off a bit of energy, even though I'm probably a bit heavier than I've ever been, and the knees are a lot worse than they've ever been, but it's good.
Yeah, I played a seven-a-side tournament last week. It was my first kickabout in a year, because I'm a goalkeeper, and got kicked in the hand, and it was so enjoyable, but my knees were on fire. I think I've just hit that age where, right, this is what Paul McGrath felt like every week. I'm starting to appreciate that. And so you got into filmmaking, or where did the love of that come from?
I suppose I always knew that I wanted to work in media from I was like no age whatsoever. I just knew straight away that's the direction I wanted to go. Initially, it was to be a photographer. And then when I went to tech at the time, I dropped out of school and went to tech, and they gave you a video camera. And it just opened up like a new world for me of like, oh, there's so much possibility that you can do this, you know. And I liked that it just wasn't as easy as taking photographs. Not that that's easy, but I mean, you know, you take one photograph and you can make it work. But anyone who works in film or has used video cameras before, to piece a story together, it takes so much skill, and it takes so much effort to actually get to that point. And that was something that was constantly chasing, was to get better and better with each project. So yeah. I knew at that stage that I really wanted to get into it. And when we started making films in tech at that point, I was just like, there's nothing else that I want to do. You know, I just kind of I felt that was the career direction, that it just felt natural. It never felt to me like I was going to do anything else after that point, I suppose. I started making films. You know, I wanted to be like Martin Scorsese and making these big dramatic epics. But as you get into it more, documentary just really appealed to me. I loved the real life stories. I loved the challenge of taking the mundane of real life, because it is quite boring, and actually making it entertaining. Like going into somebody's house and shooting a scene, but making it a sequence that's going to be entertaining for an audience. That's such a challenge, and it's difficult. It's still difficult every day, but I love that. And I suppose my roots, like, come from like a working class estate growing up. I was like, I just wanted to tell people stories, and football was a great way of getting into that as well, because you had the sports side of it, and then you had the human side of people, you know.
Yeah, well, we'll get into how you went to kind of embrace your love of football. Because it is, I mean, you can't, it's drama on the pitch and it's storytelling in the clubs and the people around the clubs. But if I could talk about maybe some of the other work you've done, you've worked in film and television for over a decade. And you say you sent me through some information about covering stories in Japan and old boxers in Philadelphia. Could you tell us a bit about those projects?
Yeah, so whenever I was a student living in England, I was only an hour outside of London, and there was a producer in Belfast who I bumped into and just met with a chance meeting at a wedding. And she had said that she was looking for a cameraman based just around London. And I was like, well, I'm in London, you know, we had ties here. So she gave me a job, and we made a documentary on the mod scene in London. So the mod subculture, you know, the Who and all that kind of stuff. So we went and we made a documentary together. I cut it together. It ended up being my final year piece, and it worked really well. So it was a success for her. And then Emma Rosa Diaz is her name. She called me one night and she was like, that was a success. I think we've just been commissioned to go to Tokyo to basically do a follow-up on it. Now, I was like, literally finished uni on, said on Monday, I got the phone call on the Wednesday to say that we're going to Tokyo in like 2 months' time. And my graduation was that week. So I was sitting with my mom and I was like, yeah, I'm going to Tokyo. I'm not doing this graduation. Honestly, my mom was like distraught. She was a bit, it's still a sore point now. Like she asked me a couple of weeks ago, she was like, do you think we could reenact the graduation photo? I was like, I'm 12 years older now.
Amazing.
Yeah, I look so haggard now, you know, after 10 years in the industry. But yeah, we went to Tokyo and we made a documentary over there, and that was just insane, you know, going across. And at the time, we did it in such a guerrilla way. You know, our budgets were tiny in comparison to what most programs are. We had like shitty wee cameras, and we just went and made this great piece over in Tokyo, which, you know, I'm still very proud of now. And that really opened up, I suppose, a career in, well, not a career at the time, but more opportunities of filmmaking. And it was the first time I really established that, okay, I'm definitely in the documentary sphere here. You know, I don't really want to go back into the short films, the kind of dramas. And after that, the first doc I made by myself was following a magician from England, actually. And it's crazy because I told my friends I was working on it, and they're like, oh, that's great. And in our opening sequence, we have the magician performing for Paul Weller and Martin Freeman. And they were like, oh, what? Like, we didn't realize that you actually had, you know, people involved in it. So right. It was nice to be able to put those faces on the first documentary I produced, kind of helped get it out there a good bit. Since then, it really opened up. And we produced a doc, like several docs on boxing. I worked in boxing for a few years and kind of became like Matchroom's person in Ireland. If anything was happening here, I would shoot the promos for them. And when I was working in boxing, I was interviewing so many former boxers, and I thought, this is a real interesting angle to take. So we worked up a taster. We went to Philadelphia and we interviewed former boxers as well. Unfortunately, COVID kind of hit the feature on the head, but it ended up becoming a half hour for BBC Northern Ireland at the time. And it was all kind of Ireland-based as opposed to being the American angle too. But it was just great. And that's what I said. It's the real life stories, you know. The world might be sport, but what are the human stories in it? And looking at that angle of former boxers who still have the itch to fight, but they don't know how to really turn away from boxing in front of 30,000 people and everyone knowing your name to going back to taking out the bins on a Monday morning. You know, I always thought that was kind of a nice paradox there.
Yeah, I love that. And so, but as I said in the intro, football is your first love. And you're from Newry, or Newry City became your club?
Yeah, I live just outside Newry. I'm from Bessbrook, which is, I get a lot of slagging for that. Okay. Bessbrook has their own team, but it's like, you know, proper amateur league. So Newry is like my local team that would be of any standard. But yeah, huge Newry City fan. And I suppose that a lot of people can maybe relate to this, but I didn't really have pride in coming from Newry until I left it. And, you know, because I suppose everybody grows up like, this is a shithole, get me out of here. But whenever I got to England, I actually looked back and I was like, I loved coming home, you know. And I, when I finished university, we had the chance to stay on in London and live, but I just kind of wanted to come back. I just, like, you could build a career, you could build an industry here, you know, you could feed back into the area that you came from. You don't necessarily need to go abroad for that. And I wanted to show that. So I think at the time it worked so well that, you know, that Newry were starting to rebuild after going bust. And I had started to go to games then, more like fleetingly, probably 10 to 12 games a season. And then it really kind of took me in. I was like, oh, this is brilliant. You know, I love the town that I come from, and support team is the perfect way of encapsulating that. So that's when I really started to take a proper interest. And I had friends from my childhood who were still going, that I bumped into and I hadn't spoken to in years. And all of a sudden it just became that thing of like, at the weekends, I have a new group of friends. And that's when we were on a Saturday, and you had your own little fun in the afternoons, and then I could go and meet my mates on Saturday nights.
And I suppose not alien to most clubs on the island of Ireland, the story of always flirting with extinction. And that's what prompted you to make a documentary on that, Newry's kind of demise and resurrection.
Yeah, so when I had moved to England, I was around about 2011, 2012, and Newry had gone bust in 2013. Oh, sorry, they'd come back in 2013. They'd gone bust in 2012. And I remember watching from a distance, just thinking, it's awful that that's happened, you know? So when I moved back, I started to go to games and realized that there was a story on your own front door, which isn't often the case. Like, I've been to Tokyo, I've been to America, and you're looking around the place thinking for the big story. And I thought, this is a story that's better than anywhere, you know, a club that was rebuilding. They had literally nothing, the old cliche of like a bag of balls and a few bibs, that was about it. Everything was stripped. The club was had to reform and come back. They started in the bottom division of possibly get back into and had to work their way back up. And I was just like, you know, the story tells itself. So the good thing about the team at the time is they just focused completely on local players. And it was all like boys that I'd grown up with, boys that you go out on Saturday nights and see in pubs. I loved that element of it, of going into a pub and seeing, oh, there's the striker for Newry, you know? Having a crack with them. And I liked that element of it. So at the time, my good friend Gareth McCullough, his family have always kind of been involved in the club. And I went to him and said, I would like to make a doc about Newry City. And initially it was going to be like a 10-minute little piece that, you know, here's what's happening and here's where they're going. But when we got in, the club were so open and so like accessible. And they were like, yeah, shoot whatever you want. The manager, Darren Mullen, I think he just loved the idea that someone would tell that story. And all of a sudden it was like I was in the change room every game with him. And home and away, I was up at his house. And then it was like, okay, we're just doing a long documentary here. That's what it's going to become. So, you know, it was an amazing season in that Newry got promoted at the end of it. It's called Here We Are, by the way, it's on YouTube. And as I said, it was, you know, like the old shitty cameras that we had. It was just basically anything that we could do to get it made, we did. But a lot happened that season. Darren Mullen's father had died. And at the time, it was in around November time, he'd said, he'd sent the text to say his dad had died. And I kind of thought, that's the documentary done now. I don't know how you go back. How do you go back in and rebuild it again? But he rang me the following day and was just like, would you like to come up and I'll give you an interview? So like, wow. He was just completely open with us, you know, and it helped so much for the piece and for what it became. And like, I'll always be thankful to the club because that really gave me a massive start, I think, to properly step into the industry and establish yourself as a filmmaker. It was the first piece that I had directed that got to TV.
Right.
It was, you know, the first piece that had won awards properly. And I was kind of like, right, well, now we're getting somewhere. So I felt like it was a massive step for me. And it would never have been possible without the likes of Darren being so open to it. Which worked for him as well, because he has, you know, such a part of his life documented, which is nice. And that's something you never see with, well, like amateur football, you know, like when would that ever happen? So I feel like we kind of got in before the whole football documentary thing took a massive, hugely popular, like with Sunderland and with the...
Exactly.
You know, we kind of just got in around that time and it brought the club to people and opened it up to a wider audience, which was always the key thing. And the main point of it was, I love going down here. I want to show people what it's like to go and support the local team, and hopefully it convinced a few people.
I mean, that story of how they went bust, from my research, was a former manager asked that they be wound up and they didn't contest it. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it was a non-fair dismissal trial.
Right.
And I think whenever they realised what the club had to pay out, they saw what they had to pay out, and then they realised that there was probably a lot more owed out from the club, and I think it just wasn't financially viable to carry on. I think the best option for them was to fold and restart again. But, you know, Newry could have become Oma Town, who folded and never came back. They could have become a club like that. If it wasn't for the likes of Darren and the committee members at the time, we wouldn't have a club today. Like, they drove Stormont to the offices up here, and I don't know what they did up there, but they managed to get help and they got funding wherever they could get it. But it very much was like, you know, 12 people, I think, who just banded together and did everything that they had to do, got a constitution, got a committee together. A good friend of ours, Gary Wilson, was out literally knocking doors at nighttime to get sponsorship, to try to get a team onto the pitch. You know, they were signing players that were playing in the local leagues here, like, I mean, the local Sunday league kind of stuff. And all of a sudden, they were now playing for Newry City, which was always the biggest honour. But those that core team is still there today, you know, behind the scenes.
Yeah, and they went on this roller coaster adventure of promotion after promotion. But there was a kind of a, not a split, but it a phoenix club, I think, is described as. A lot of the players went to Warren Point Town. Is that right?
Yeah, that's a sore point. I mean,
okay.
I think where Newry had finished off was they were in the Championship when they had been wound up, and a lot of those players went to Warren Point, and then Warren Point then got promoted from the Championship and enjoyed quite a long run in the Premiership here. So we kind of feel like if our team's never disbanded, we could have gone quite far and done quite well.
Right.
But, you know, it's completely understandable. It's like a friendly rivalry between Warren Point and Newry.
Right.
A lot of players have played for both teams. Coaches have coached at both teams. Everybody knows each other. But I don't think Warren Point would have achieved what they had if it wasn't for that, you know. Like our captain now had played for Newry for, I think, 7 or 8 years when we went bust, went and played for Warren Point and then came back and captained us. So we always say one man club with an asterisk, you know, even never
okay.
for Warren Point had that happen. But no, the run that we went on was insane. I think it was it 5 promotions in 6 seasons or 4 and 5? I think I forget the number. I should know that. 4 and 5, I think it was, which was just ridiculous, you know, to have that kind of success at any level is amazing. And like people were calling you like glory hunter. It was like, there's nothing glory filled when you're standing in parks watching your football team play. You know, there was no stadiums. There was no vendors. There was nothing like this. You were literally standing in parks watching Newry City play against whoever it might have been.
Well, it has given rise to maybe my favourite derby name in football. I'll let you tell the story, but Warren Point becoming your rivals created an unbelievable name for your derbies.
Yeah, the most recent version of it is called the Mourne Ultimatum.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's the Mourne Derby, they call it, and we played them 4 times in 1 season, so I think the marketing for every game was a different Bourne movie.
So amazing.
It was brilliant. Yeah, the Mourne identity, the Mourne ultimatum, and whatever else there was. But it was great at the time, and it became a bit of a joke in the football circles here. You know, people thought that was brilliant. But it was a great way of marketing the derbies, and it got people involved. Because even yet, it's still, if we play Warren Point, it's our biggest gate of the season.
Going on that, so I have to hold my hand up and say, I'm a big League of Ireland fan, but my knowledge of the Northern Irish League is limited. I would have known like the cross-border competitions where probably League of Ireland sides, would be fair to say, kind of had the upper hand in it. But what is the kind of standing of football in Northern Ireland from your perspective in terms of quality, attendances, etc.? Because I think when Newry came back, there was talk of them joining the League of Ireland initially, and that was blocked by the Northern Ireland Football Association. So as a kind of for an outsider, how would you describe the current status of the domestic game?
I think it's growing massively, and not much good came out of COVID, but one of the things was that a lot more people, when it opened up that you could go back to football, a lot more people were going to the local teams. And generally, like, I don't care who you support in the north here, if you're supporting your local team, I'm 100% behind you. You know, I think it's very important. If in terms of quality, our league kind of splits into 2 different leagues. We have the top 6 and the bottom 6 of our division. The top 6 is like Linfield, Glentoran, Larne, you know, the teams that are full time, the teams that are paying players proper wages to play for them. They have European football, they've got big crowds. And then you've got the bottom 6, where you've got the part-time teams like us who, you know, we've got essentially semi-pro, you know, players that are working full-time on building sites in the morning and then having to travel to matches that night, and massive disadvantages. But, you know, the crowds that we would get generally, I think this season have probably been in around 900 to 1,000. We equates to, like, if there's any English listeners, like non-league kind of stuff, even though there's non-league teams that would have more. I would say that our stadiums up here would be, on the whole, maybe better than the stadiums in the League of Ireland that have been to this season.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, overall, yeah, I just think a lot of the stadiums would be in a better place. But As a league, I think the quality is growing. We have people like Chris Shields, who's up now playing for Linfield, who's just like my favourite footballer ever. Like, I just every time I see him, he's just unbelievable. And what he achieved in Dundalk, who are just down the road from us, and then to see him coming up and playing against Newry and stuff, we're still kind of like a little bit starstruck with Chris Shields playing. But you know, I think the quality is good. It's maybe not like up there with what most people would enjoy. A lot of my mates wouldn't go to support Newry or would rarely watch them. They prefer to watch the Premier League on TV, which is the constant battle that Irish football has. But I think when we look down south and we see like the League of Ireland is just on a completely different level, I think, compared to ours. You know, I know we'll talk about it, but like the Louth Derby is a derby I've gone to a few times this year. The scale, like for only having 3,000 people, it is pound for pound like a mini European derby. You know, it's like seeing Italy or that. And I've done like the big two derby between Glentoran and Linfield this year. Windsor Park doesn't help because it's an 18,000 seater and you had 10,000 in it. But you had 7,500. So that doesn't help. But the atmosphere down south just has that little edge, I think. You know, I think that also comes from the real tribalism that you have in teams in Dublin, because it's like the towns of Dublin have their own teams, and that becomes really like real partisan. That's their team, that's who they support. The problem that we would have up here, I think, I might get slated for it, but is that Linfield would almost be like the Manchester United of there's a Newcastle team. I know people in Newry, there's a guy that lives right opposite me here who supports Linfield, you know, or there's a guy across the road that supports Cliftonville. But they would support the big Belfast teams and not their local team, which is, you know, I don't want to shake people like that, but particularly when it's your local league, you know, I think you have to kind of give support.
Well, you mentioned COVID and you mentioned, your experiences of the League of Ireland, which we'll go on to, but it's kind of a new phenomenon in the League of Ireland is that these sold out signs at League of Ireland grounds, this growing fan culture. You know, the attendances have been growing year on year, but only in the last couple of years. And there seems to be this real shift, as you say, I think since COVID, there's this shift of we were locked up, we want to get out, we want to get out and do things. But allied to that is this kind of subculture that League of Ireland and domestic football and going to a game on the weekend has become cool, has become the go-to thing. And it's kind of organic. And I think the work you do and social media has exploded this, that clubs have really embraced social media and what it can do for them. But also things like photography and videography has all contributed to this explosion of an Irish football culture across the island.
Social media is massive in it. It's absolutely huge. Like, I've gone to League of Ireland games this year and I've been standing outside and I'll just walk up, I'll go by myself and talk to people, and there'll be guys from England that are coming over and they're like, we've seen the atmosphere, we've seen like videos, we've seen the flares, and I know that like clubs can't officially embrace the flares, but it helps massively. And so many people that I've spoken to are feeling disillusioned with football in England, and they're feeling like, you know, even in England, I suppose they're starting to support more of their non-league teams as well, but they feel so disillusioned with what it's becoming that they're coming to Ireland, and what they're feeling is like they're getting that raw football experience that they're lacking, and that maybe their dads would have grown up with in England or in Scotland, what it was actually like in the 80s. It's kind of like here, you know, it's booming. You've got so many young people, young men particularly, now building the ultra scenes for each clubs. And you know, and often they get, they're frowned upon, or they're doing this wrong, they're doing that wrong, but I think they're doing it probably better than ever, because they are working now with clubs and they're finding out like where can we push this to, you know, what are the boundaries that we can push it to, how can we create such a big atmosphere without overstepping the mark. Sometimes it spills over, fair enough, but they're creating an atmosphere, and it's down to those young people who are in the stands who've picked up the baton now, and they're like in their early 20s realizing that they can create this atmosphere that's contributing to better players wanting to actually play in the league, or players maybe stay with their clubs instead of going abroad because they're not getting that experience. So it's something that's blown up massively. Like I've been going to Dundalk games for quite a few years with friends, particularly in our off season, and to see where it is now compared to even like 8 years ago. And I know big success 8 years ago, but it just means generally the atmosphere and the demand for tickets, it's just huge, you know. Dundalk is 10 minutes from me and it feels like a million miles away in comparison to sometimes what we're watching, you know.
Well, you mentioned like about like people from England. I know like Key, the other half Pogue McGoals, is a season ticket holder at Bowes, and at every Bohemians games you'll get English, Germans, and you say they see it on video. I mean, and there's also Irish people who never would have gone to League of Ireland games now going because they see the videos, but they don't see the like slick, you know, it's not slick marketing. It's kind of guys like you, independent filmmakers, going in, making stuff and just showing what it's like with some like excellent editing, but showing you what it's really like. And that's what's attracting people to the games. It seems organic, and this scene has, I think, has a huge amount owed to people like you making the things that you do, which is kind of where your channel came from, if you want to tell us about that.
Yeah, so the Match in a Minute channel was basically, I started making videos. In fact, where it actually started was last year, my wife and myself did a day trip to Luton, to Kenilworth Road. I managed to get two tickets. The flights from Dublin to Luton were like 20 quid each return. So we're like, right, we'll just go. So we did a day trip. I filmed it all on my phone and came back and I did a quick edit and I sent it to a friend and he was like, oh, that would be perfect for TikTok. Like that kind of format. I never used TikTok before. So I went on and put it on. It did okay. And then in my next video, I went to Coleraine with Newry City and I basically made a video of how much does it cost you for an away day. And for me, it was like £35 or something. And it had, I think, 80,000 views. And I was like, oh, okay, there's a market here for that. You know, the people actually want to see what it's like, I suppose, at raw football level, you know, find it. And then I just did more and more games. We went abroad and my brother and myself went to like a fourth division Polish match when we were over in the stag do. And it got 300,000 views. And I started to think, this is just crazy. Like, you know, it was like overnight, it just blew up. And I was like, this is, you know, people want those experiences and they're starting to love that real grassroots level of football. And being a documentary filmmaker, my idea was to kind of build an audience on TikTok and then move it slightly over to YouTube for more kind of crafted quality things. I find with TikTok, I shoot it all on a phone. It's easy, you know, the more raw, the better almost. But I wanted to make more craft stuff on the YouTube, which is why we then launched it with, but we wanted a good project to launch it with, which was the Louth Derby. I think, you know, maybe more than ever, the subculture around football is growing. And through stuff like your magazine, you know, and different outlets, you have Instagram pages now. It seems to be football is an attractive place for people to demonstrate what talents they actually have outside of it. Like graphic designers, photographers, videographers. There's endless stories, there's endless material in football. And I think it's now becoming the place where people are going to showcase those talents. You've got massive fan bases, but people seem to love the more niche stuff that is being crafted. You know, some of the graphic designs that I see are just breathtaking, you know, and made by fans, by fans. Stuff you'd struggle to see in magazines 10 years ago. And fans who just support clubs have their own followings now, and people just love the stuff that they're producing. So we kind of wanted to tap into that. And as always with everything we do, it's about the fans. The fans look at it, you know, and what that means for the people supporting the football.
And that, so as you say, you launched your YouTube channel with one of these kind of longer form documentary style, which is your profession and your passion, on the Louth Derby. And it is excellent, Ali. It's such a good video. And I mean, I've followed League of Ireland and obviously would have known about Dundalk's success, I learned a hell of a lot from that video and seeing the passion of the fans, and they really don't like each other. But tell us a little bit about that documentary, because it is like, it's genuinely superb, the highest quality.
Thank you. Well, do you know what my father-in-law always says? You're in the industry of teaching people something, teaching people about something that they know nothing about. And I kind of looked at that, the Louth Derby myself. I went down last year and went to a match and it honestly blew me away. It was at United Park down in Drogheda. And I think there was only like 2,500 at it. And the atmosphere was just like, I think I went by myself and I stood there and I was like, oh my God, I've never seen anything like this. You know, I've been to Bows and Rovers matches, which are obviously just like, they're the peak in the country, you know. But to have 2,500 people crammed into United Park and the hatred and, but not only that, it was like the quality of even like the tifos, the flares were going off, the organization and the choreography with everything. I was like, this is like what you see in Galatasaray, but just condensed and put into a tiny place in Drogheda. So I think the cogs started turning then. I was like, okay, there's a story here. I only live, you know, as I said, 10 minutes from Dundalk, 35 minutes from Drogheda. I was kind of like, I've never really heard about this derby. I know that it exists, but I suppose I kind of underappreciated it or was a bit ignorant to it. After that, I started doing a bit more research and I thought this is a perfect documentary to kick it all off with, because people in Ireland might not know the extent it goes to outside of Ireland. They might look at it and think, oh, like that's class. So we started doing a little bit of research and it took time to get in. You know, I have to say it took a little bit of work to gain the trust. Now, I know people at both clubs, which helped. So we started kind of fishing about and doing a bit of research on it and working out, you know, who we need to speak to, how do we make the official approaches. We had other projects to show them, but it was the first kind of project under this banner of Match the Minute documentaries. So we had nothing really to go on. So we just had to kind of gain their trust a little bit. So it took a lot of to-ing and fro-ing and meeting with people, but both clubs were great. Once the doors were open for us, like nothing was a hassle. You know, we spoke with players, which was great, being able to sit down with the likes of Pat Hoogan and interview Pat, legend of Irish football, and being able to talk to these people. But again, the most important thing was getting the fans' take on it, because that's who people hear from. With all the best intentions in the world, but footballers are footballers and they'll feed you kind of like... they don't want to set themselves up for a fall in the derby. Whereas when you talk to fans, I was like, what do you think of Drogheda? What do you think of Dundalk? And they're like, I hate them, you know. Like, and you get actual raw stuff. And I was like, that's exactly what you want as a fan, you know. Ask any football fan, like ask a Spurs fan what they think of Arsenal. They're going to tell you truthfully. But ask the players, and that's always kind of guarded. So I like that mix that we got between the players and the fans. The players kept it grounded. The fans allowed us to push it out a little bit more and get that raw reaction. But yeah, the doc took a while to put together, and I had a small team working with me. It was only like 4 or 5 people that just kind of helped me out. We had James, a good photographer, a friend of mine, and Michael, Mark, and Stephen, and that was literally it. You know, we shot it over the summer, and then it was just a case of editing it in the spare time. And we wanted it from the start. We always wanted to release it in the week of the next derby, which was in September. And when you shoot it in June and it's all wrapped up, you're like, oh, that's grand. And then all of a sudden it was like August and we're like, right, we need to get this thing together here because it's coming. So, you know, we didn't even get to do the proper marketing that we had planned or anything with it, just with work and life getting in the way. And we put it out there. And I think in the world of YouTube with vloggers getting millions of views, you can kind of lose sight on what's actually successful. But we got 6,500 views on it, I think, as of now. And I think that's huge. You know, that's double what fits in the United Park on a derby night. So I was delighted with it.
And what has the reaction been from the clubs, the fans and the wider public?
To be honest, I haven't seen one negative comment, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of bracing myself for that. I put myself into the documentary solely for the reason that I'm a Northern accent making a piece on football in the League of Ireland. So I didn't want people to think like, who's this guy? You know, why is there a Northern voice in this? So I put myself in the first like 10 seconds, I think, after the intro, just to say like, this is who I am. This is why I'm doing it, because I didn't want kind of questions about it. And even on TikTok, like I would get abuse now and again for things, but I haven't had one bad comment. Everyone, I think, has been happy that a focus has been given to the league. And given to the derby, and it's put, you know, it's like I said, the reason we do it is to show people how great this is, like that you can go and support local teams and get a buzz that you just can't get anywhere else. Like honestly, the I've been to football all across Europe, but there's just something about those big League of Ireland special nights. I would take them over anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, that says it all, doesn't it? And it's also, it's got its unique Irish quirks to it, like the loud derby and the guy saying it's Drogheda, not Drogheda. And I mean, the guy saying they take the day off work for the derby, and that's not contrived. That's genuine. I mean, there is a scene here, and it kind of has exploded over the last couple of years. And it's amazing to see, but also amazing to see it documented.
Yeah, I think that's important, you know. And when you have a job like yourselves, like you've documented Irish football brilliantly over the past few years, and I think that you have a responsibility to show the league off as well as you can, and to create that culture around it, and use your skills in whatever way. You know, the graphic designers are doing their piece for amazing matchday posters. Like, look at Bo's matchday's posters, and Pats are doing it now as well. And so many clubs, they're works of art. They're no longer just, oh, this game's happening on Friday. But it creates, that's what makes it such a unique league and such a unique country for football. It kind of blows my mind a little bit that there's not, that opening was there for me to come in and make a documentary. I thought that people would be making them, but I haven't really found those yet. It seems to be the vlog thing is the big thing now.
Yes.
I've never really gone for pointing the camera at myself. No one wants to hear from me walking and getting my opinions at the match. I prefer letting that genuine fans of the clubs do the talking. Yeah. So if we can bring that kind of production quality and our experience to it, I think that, you know, the Louth Derby was the reason that we made it, was our calling card to kind of step into this world of creating documentaries in Irish football, north and south.
Yeah.
We just wanted that calling card to say, okay, here's what we can do. We did it very quickly, but over time, I think we can build that up. And we want to create a community of people who want to get involved and tell good stories, you know, so hopefully we can.
So the intention will be to do a lot more of these.
Absolutely. You know, it's almost like an Irish Cup of 90 as such, you know, that's...
Yeah.
I've grown up loving Copa 90 stuff over the past 10 years, especially going to football more and more. Just, I love how they've tapped into it. And if we could do something along those lines and make it appealing to young fans. I mean, one of the most amazing things is, like, in the comments of the videos, the Dundalk and the Drogheda Ultras were, like, talking in the comments, you know, and, like, I was like, that would never happen. I thought they'd be killing each other. But we've created something they both agreed on, they both enjoyed it. And it showed them off in good light. So that's what we want to continue. We actually just wrapped on Friday. We have been doing a bit of work with Shamrock Rovers in the build up to their four in a row. So hopefully in the next month or so, you'll have a fan led documentary seeing the four in a row through their eyes, which is great. But, you know, we're working in our own time. We're funding it ourselves. There's not going to be as many projects as we would like. But I think if we can hit the sweet spot of like four a year at the minute, I think we'd be doing quite well for the channel.
You mentioned Copa 90, and I mean, I do think that Dublin Derby video they did that our own key was in, I think it was this kind of seminal moment, actually. I think it garnered so much attention from people who would never pay attention to League of Ireland, both in Ireland and outside. And I would wager that has had an effect on the Bowes gate and the whole upswell of people getting involved in clubs around the country. But that is quite a while ago now. And you guys, I think the time is ripe to step in and continue that. But from Irish filmmakers who can tap into the local scene, and... Yeah, I'm really excited to see what you produce.
I agree completely with the Copa 90 and the Bowes Rovers one, because that was the doc that I saw. I was making the Newry one around, but at the same time, that's the doc that I saw, and I was like, oh, wow, that's what football is like, and it can be. And not long after, my friend Stephen and myself started going down to Dublin for that derby. We would pick it one a year, and we would just go down to it and just to experience it. And actually, a really mad thing happened one time. We're talking about people coming from abroad to see it. I went to a Bowes Rovers game at Daly Mount and was walking down, like, just down the front to go up onto the terrace, and this guy walked past me, and I was like, he looks so familiar. It was my cousin from Scotland, right? He's a big,
wow,
massive Dundee United fan, and apparently they have some link with Bowes, which I never knew about. So 10 or 20 fans came across for it, and I just couldn't believe it. I was like, the appeal is actually going up to the northeast of Scotland, and people are coming down to watch games, because they more than likely they've seen that documentary too and just thought, wow, this is, we're not getting this anymore, you know. So like, if we can continue and I suppose tap into that need and that want for content like that, and I don't particularly like using the word content, but you know, tapping into it and creating documentaries for people that and there's hundreds of stories, like even within Dundalk and Drogheda, we were talking to people, and there's one story that we're trying to work up at the minute with Dundalk fan, but there's just some crazy stories that happen in the League of Ireland. It's just you read about these things in South America and you're like, oh, okay, that's nuts. But then even crazier things are happening here, you know. So I think there's loads of stories that we want to tell and continue to keep making these documentaries, and hopefully we can get more and more people involved, because we have a baby on the way, and I don't think time will be as free maybe this time next year as it is now. So we're trying to bring that next generation of filmmakers and give them a platform. If they have an idea and they want to make something, we just want to create a platform for them that they can do that.
Excellent. And as I said, like, I don't get it exposed to Northern Irish football. So I'd be really excited to see what you do in that sphere as well, because I mean, the parallels with football in the League of Ireland and Northern Ireland, I mean, they must be so similar and different, and it'd be good to kind of celebrate and see those differences. So yeah, I'm really excited to see what else you produce on Newry and around Northern Ireland also.
Yeah, that's something that we're trying to work up is NIFL. And look, the NIFL League it's my league. It's the one I support week in, week out. I'm a huge fan of it. It's growing brilliantly over the past few years. Like, we're seeing bigger gates. More and more people are getting involved. So hopefully, you know, we can create something that, in the same way that the Louth Derby has done for us, that we can do that for other clubs up here and share that experience as well. But I love the league. It's actually got to the point where we were going to Madrid last year, my wife and I, for holiday, and Newry were drawn at a certain game, and I said, okay, we're postponing and we're flying a day late, because I didn't want to miss any match, you know. This is just what comes, you know. It just comes. It's not even an obsession. I'm just like, it has to happen, you know. I can't miss a game for this or that, for that. So
yeah, it becomes part of life, doesn't it? Before I let you go, I suppose one of the big stories of football in these islands is the Euros and the Casement Park redevelopment. What is the kind of feeling on the ground in Northern Ireland football circles about that? We've spoken similarly before about, you know, these big tournaments in the Aviva Stadium in Dublin doesn't really do anything for domestic football, but it'd be good to get your take on what the feeling is in the north.
Yeah, I kind of agree in that. It was announced that it was going to be happening in the UK and Ireland, and then all of a sudden it was like, well, they have a few years to build a stadium in Casement Park, but we don't have a sitting government at the minute, so I don't know how that's going to happen or what's going to happen with it. It's an interesting one. I think, like everything up here, it's so it's such a mixed bag of where it could go, but I don't know. I try not to say too much about what should or shouldn't happen with the whole case thing, but it'll be interesting to see what actually happens over the next couple of years. I think it's good. It's definitely good. You know, if Belfast could host massive matches in the Euros in the same way that Dublin has, Dublin will be as well. Like, it can only be good for the cities and getting tourists in, you know, but it'll just be interesting to see how that takes shape over the next couple of years.
Yeah. And ultimately, as kind of football people and followers of domestic football, we want to see the legacy trickle down to that level. It's great having, you know, tourists and the city benefits, the economy benefits, but as football people, you want the legacy to be in the football we watch week in, week out. Ali, it's been fantastic talking to you. Before I let you go, just tell us where people can see your videos and your content.
Yes, we have the YouTube channel, which is Match in a Minute, and TikTok, which is on Match in a Minute as well. So they're the kind of the two main channels. Instagram is probably, it's on Match of the Minute as well. It's probably the one where we'll be in contact with people the most. But yeah. TikTok is kind of where you'll see the videos, and YouTube is where you'll see the documentaries in time.
Yeah, even on your Instagram channel, I mean, the photography is fantastic as well. So it gives you a flavour of what the videos look like. And I highly recommend people check out the Loud Derby video, because it is excellent. So Ali McKenzie, yeah, thank you very much for joining us, and really excited to see what comes in the future.
Yeah, thanks a million, James, and keep up the great work with the mag as well. Big fan of it.
Cheers. Thanks, Ali. That's it for the latest episode. Drop us a rating and toggle back wherever you get your pods for previous shows. And join us next time on the Pogue McGold podcast.